Greetings from Church of the Resurrection, and thank you for taking time to listen to this message. We hope you find this message meaningful and relevant. We invite you to join us in worship at any time. We're located just south of 135th Street between Rowe and Nall Avenue in Leawood, Kansas. If you have any questions or comments, or you would like a DVD of the service, you may reach us by phone at 913-897-0120. Please ask for the Well Bookstore or visit our website at www.cor.org, where you will find a link for our catalog. And now, may you be blessed as you give attention to the reading of God's Word.
Our scripture this morning encourages us to have grateful hearts and comes from 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19. As for those who in this present age are rich, command them not to be haughty or to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but rather on God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, generous and ready to share, thus storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of the life that really is life. May God's blessing be added to the reading, hearing, and doing of this word. Please be seated.
Today we bring to a conclusion our series of sermons, After the Fire. And in week one, we looked at the fire that we've been through economically in the last year in our country. And we looked at the sources of our hope in times of devastation or destruction. Then the next week, we looked at where we are now, seeing that the embers are still smoldering and there's pockets of fire in places, but we can see that there has been a turn and we're heading in the right direction, though very, very slowly. And we looked at how do we live now in the new normal. Today we're going to bring this to a conclusion by looking at what we invest in today and how fires are an opportunity to reevaluate our priorities, to reevaluate our lives. And so you saw in the video clip these images of the fire, but then the flowers that are blooming afterwards, because we believe that's what is in the future for us, is that as people of faith, we see that our best years are ahead of us and not behind us, and that there is beauty and wonderful things to come out of the fire. Now, I want to begin by inviting you to take out of your bulletin your Grow, Pray, and Study guide, and I'm going to ask you to write a few things down as you go along during today's message. Just those things where you feel like God is speaking to you, I'd like to encourage you to write those down. And the basic outline of today's message, I believe you'll be blessed as you reflect upon that this week, and then you'll find our daily scripture readings inside. If you're watching online, you can download this from the internet. Now, the question that everybody's asking these days in terms of finances, at least those folks who are looking at investing for their retirement, is what are you investing in? I chair the board at St. Paul School of Theology here in Kansas City, and we have an endowment fund, and our school is relatively small, and the endowment is really important for paying the salaries of our professors. And so this last year was pretty devastating for our endowment and for most universities across the country. This was a serious and challenging year. And we were meeting with our investment folks, our brokerage firm and the folks who guide us. And as a board, we were speaking with them and we said, so now what do we invest in? I mean, we've watched our portfolio drop in value precipitously in the last year. We've got $24 million in the endowment fund. What are we going to invest that in so that we can recoup some of the losses that we've experienced? And, of course, everybody's asking that question when it comes to their retirement funds and endowments. And they began to walk through the various things we might invest in and the reasons why they were bad ideas, that this sector of the stock market is not a good investment and these kinds of investments are not good now, and this is going to be the challenge here, and this is what the roadmap looks like over the next few years. And finally, I spoke up and I said, you know, to be honest, I'm listening to you guys and I'm thinking, really the only answer is for us to take all the money out of the markets and out of your hands, put it in pillowcases and stick it underneath our beds for the next couple of years. And they said, no, that's not going to work either because the value of the dollar is declining. And so even that you're going to lose money at. You begin to think, well, where do I invest? What do we do? And you know, I like some of you, have tried to invest for retirement. And you know, I get a couple of things every year. Once a year I get this from the Social Security Department, letting me know how much money I'm going to have to live on when I retire. And this just depresses me. But then I get my stock market, or you know, my report from our investment advisors, and you know, this year this depressed me too. It was a sort of roller coaster where we lost, you know, 30 or 40%, and then we gained back about 20%, and 1 week we lose 5%, and the next week it goes back 5%, and a few years ago I decided I would invest, I would just sort of pick a few stocks on my own, one of the stocks I told my advisor I'd really like to buy General Motors stock. You know, they're a big company, and I think they have smart people there, and I just know they're going to turn around, and GM's never going to go bankrupt. Yeah. Another one, I said, there's a tech company here in Kansas City, and I'm really excited about them. They've seen a meteoric rise in their stock prices. You know, they've gone from 10 or 15 bucks a share to 30 bucks a share, and I bought some at 30, and then I bought some at 50, and then at 75, and then they got to 100, and I bought a little bit more at 100, today they're trading at $32 a share. And so, you know, those investments didn't work out so well. Now, I have others, Apple stock and a few others that have done pretty well. But here's what I've learned through all of that. What I've learned this last year is you can have the most carefully laid plans, but they may not necessarily come to fruition. You can't count on certain stock returns coming back to you, or even the fact that what you thought was going to be there is going to be there when you retire. This morning I received an email from one of our members asking me to pray for a family, a woman and her children, whose 40-year-old husband died yesterday. I don't know if I'll even live to see this, right? Do you know for sure? And so what this last year has taught me is to hold this really loosely, to not have this be the focus of my life. This is not what my life is about. This is a tool to help me in the future to maybe be able to do some things I couldn't do otherwise. But this is not where my life exists. Now, you know, it's easy for us when we begin to think about, you know, what we're investing in. We think about these things. But I'm going to suggest to you, when you think about investing, that there are a couple of things before you ever consider investing in the markets that are really important to your net worth. And by the way, your net worth, is your value really the total of your assets minus your liabilities? Or does your life have greater value than that? So let's begin with this idea of your net worth, and then we're going to move into two things that I'm going to suggest you invest in, and then we'll wrap it up today. Let's talk about your net worth first. I want to tell you two different stories. One is of a man who has been a very hard worker his entire life. He has spent the last 42 years in his career building a career for himself, and he's done a great job. He's moved up the ranks in his company. He makes good money. He has invested wisely for his retirement, and even after the last year, he has, I'm assuming, millions and millions of dollars in his retirement accounts. He's paid off his home, and his cars are paid off, and he's lived really smartly, and he's retiring in a couple years, and he's ready for retirement, except just one thing. All of those years of working 65, 70, 75 hours a week, there was just really no time for the kids. No time for developing a relationship with his children. His children graduated from high school and got off to college and got married, and they had children, and there was even less time for the grandchildren. There was no time for friends. And so here's a man who's 2 years away from retirement, and he hardly knows his children or his grandchildren and doesn't have a friend. Is he rich or is he poor? There's a woman I know who retired several years ago. Her husband passed away. She found that there was less in the retirement fund than what she had anticipated, especially this year since the stock market has declined so precipitously. And she's worried maybe she doesn't have enough to take care of herself and her needs for the rest of her life. Now, her house is not paid for, and she's a bit anxious about these things, but this woman spent most of her life investing in her children, in blessing them and loving them and encouraging them, and her grandchildren who come and spend time with her. in friendships with other people. So she is in a Bible study group here at the church, and she volunteers her time, and she has friends who she goes to have coffee with and connect with. And her children have said to her, "Mom, you don't have to worry about your retirement. You're okay. You know, you're our mom. We're going to take care of you. Don't worry. It's going to be okay." Now, her house is not paid off, and she doesn't have nearly the millions the other man has in his retirement, but which of these two is richer and which is poorer? Now, the first sector of your investment portfolio I'd like to encourage you or ask you if you're really investing adequately in is friendships and relationships with people who are significant in your life. Have you given enough of your time and your energy to cultivating those relationships so that there are people who are caring for you in your hour of need, so there are people who are befriending you and enriching your life all the way to the end? And you know, that's how Social Security used to work, right? Before this century, before the 1930s, it worked like families took care of each other, right? And people took care of each other. Are you investing in relationships? And you know, the interesting thing is, it's never too late to start. You know, for that man who hadn't invested much with his children or his grandchildren, you know, his children would still say, "Dad, we welcome you with open arms." They'd still want to have a relationship with him if he began to take the effort to invest in them. And it's not too late to develop friends. In a local church, he could find people that he could begin to connect with and develop friendships with and enjoy the rest of his life if he would only begin. It's never too late to invest in relationships. Are you investing adequately in the things that make you truly rich? Now, the second thing that I'd encourage you to invest in, and really these are only my only two investment strategies for you today. So the second one is it has to do with investing in your relationship with God, in your faith. Are you adequately investing in this? Now, to help us see the importance of this, I want to turn to an interview that I did with Mitch Albom not long ago. He was here speaking in our sanctuary, and then at the end of that, I had a chance to interview him. Rabbi Alan Cohen and I both asked him questions, and Mitch wrote the book Tuesdays with Maury, which is a multi-million copy bestseller around the world. He wrote the book Five People You Meet in Heaven, and more recently, Have a Little Faith. And Mitch told the story of how he had grown up in the synagogue, went to college, and studied Judaism. But when he graduated from college, he did what many of us did in our Christian faith. He drifted away from his faith, stopped attending synagogue, was no longer active. And over time, the only way that he could really deal with the fact that he wasn't doing what inside he was always taught he ought to be doing and putting God central in his life was to begin to make the case that he didn't really need God, or maybe there wasn't a God and there was no real value to faith. And so he built up this wall between himself and God over time. Now, one year he was going back to his hometown. He'd become quite a success. He was voted the most, the best sports writer in the country by other sports writers. He writes out of Detroit. His book had sold millions of copies. He was a huge success. And he was going back to his hometown and to worship for a high holy day with his family at a synagogue. Same rabbi had been there his entire life. The rabbi was there for more than 40 years. And at the end of the service, the rabbi took Mitch aside and said, "Mitch, I'd like to ask you, you have such a way with words. Would you consider giving my eulogy when I die?" And he was really surprised. It's like, "I don't even go to synagogue. I can't give your eulogy, and you're our rabbi." And he said, "No, you can. You really can. I'd like for you to give my eulogy." And Mitch said, "I realized that I had to get to know him better." And so he started going back home several times a year, and he'd spend time with the rabbi each time. For 8 years, he spent time with his rabbi. And in the midst of that, he began to rediscover the importance of faith. He describes here in this question that I asked, his answer describes a time where he finally got it, where he was speaking to his rabbi about the importance of life. And this is what his rabbi said. Take a listen.
"You know what our sages say about babies?" I said, "What?" He said, "You ever notice when they come into the world, babies' fists are clenched like that, right?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "That's because babies don't know any better, and they think that they can have everything when they enter the world." He said, "But look at me, I'm an old man, and I'm going to die soon. And how am I going to die?" And I remember he opened his hands slowly like this, and I just looked at these two empty hands, and he said, "That's because when we reach the end, we realize you can't take anything with you. And all the fussing that we do in our daily lives to own things. All the scrimping and talking and shopping so we can buy this thing and that thing and own this or that, or the status we think is important, or the house or the car or the job or whatever. It's all this, the end. None of it is going with you. None of it. In fact, the only thing that may be of some use in this life, in the next, is your faith.
And with that, Mitch Albom began to reconsider the importance of faith in his life, the importance of God in his life. Now, faith is what sustains us when we walk through the valley of the shadow of death. It's trust that God is with us and we don't have to be afraid, and that God is on the other side of death's door welcoming us. When we're walking through moments of despair and we feel like there is no hope, faith is the source of our hope. It is what tells us that somehow God is able to take all of the stuff that happens in this life and use it for our good, for those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. It was faith that allowed the Apostle Paul to write these words in 2 Corinthians 4:8-9. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Why not? Why is he not destroyed by all these things? By being shipwrecked and thrown into prison and beaten nearly to death? How could he sing psalms of praise in the middle of the night in a prison cell in Philippi? Why could he write from the prison in Rome as he's awaiting his execution a letter back to the Philippians saying, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice." And he tells us in 2 Corinthians 5:7, because we walk by faith and not by sight, because we know that no matter what happens, God is always with us. He tells us in Romans this, that faith in essence allows him to say that neither height nor depth nor angels nor demons nor things present nor things to come nor anything else in all creation is able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus. That's what faith gives you. That the, as we've said at Easter time, that the worst thing that happens is never the last thing. It's that constant companionship of God. Now, Habakkuk is a Hebrew prophet in the Old Testament. His book is very short. It's only 3 chapters long. And in this little book, he records a conversation he has with God. Now, Habakkuk is writing 600 years before Christ, 600 B.C., we think. Now, 2 weeks ago, I told you about the burning of Jerusalem in 586 B.C. and how Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were taken with the exiles down into Babylon. And well, this is 14 years before that happened. And Habakkuk looks around and he's asking the question many of us have asked. Why do the wicked prosper? Why do people who do bad things, why do they seem to be rewarded sometimes in life? And he's asking these questions and he asks God, he says, "How long, O Lord?" This is how the prophetic book begins. "How long, O Lord, will you make me watch as the violent reign supreme? How long?" And then to his surprise, God answers him. And so the book is this conversation and God says to him, "Not much longer, actually. Not much longer. And devastation will come to this city, and it will be burned to the ground. And the people will be carried away into exile by the Babylonians." And when Habakkuk hears this, he's terrified. "God, I didn't mean that. How will we survive? How is this going to be possible for us to live in such a situation like that?" And God says to him in Habakkuk 2:4 these words, "The righteous will live by their faith." The righteous will live by their faith. They will trust me in the midst of the fire that I am with them. When they're taken away into Babylon in exile, they will trust me and know that I will be with them there. Even in Babylon, the righteous will live by their faith and they will be okay. They will find strength. They will find hope. They will find joy. They will find meaning. The righteous will live by their faith. Paul picks up on that twice. In Romans and in Galatians, he quotes this same exact verse. And he says, he's speaking about justification by faith. He says, we're made right with God by trusting in Him and nothing else. We trust in Him and by our faith we live. As Habakkuk has written, the righteous or the just shall live by their faith. In the book of Hebrews, when the Christians were being persecuted for their faith, the writer of Hebrews says to them, "Hold fast and don't give up on your faith, even in the face of the bloody trials that you're going through, for the righteous will live by their faith, and you know that God walks with you, and even if you die, He will be with you on the other side." The righteous will live by their faith. Your faith is what sustains you. Your faith is all you have. When you get to the end and you realize it's not this, it's this. It is your trust in the companionship of God that gives you hope. So I would ask you this question. Are you investing adequately in your faith. If that's all you have when you get to the end, and if that's what sustains you and guides you and leads you and tells you you have a purpose in life and meaning to your existence, are you adequately investing? And one of the things that you're doing is today, you're investing in your faith. You're making a deposit into your account by virtue of being in worship, where you have a chance to sing God's praise and experience God's presence and listen for God's voice. You invest in your faith, but it can't be an hour a week that you invest and that's it. It's also what you do when you spend time in prayer, talking to God and coming to know God. It's what happens when you're connecting with other Christians and describing and discussing your faith, and your faith comes alive for you at those moments. It's when you're opening the Bible and you pray and you listen for God to speak and you hear God speaking in the Scriptures. It's in going out in mission and service to God in the world, and when you're using your gifts to be a blessing to others, you finally realize this is what I was made for, and you find joy and your faith comes alive. Are you adequately investing in the thing that matters most? In your faith, in your walk with God. Martin Luther describes faith as to the soul what breath is to the body. All right, that leads me finally to the connection between faith and money. We have been talking in this series about money and the struggles that we have with it and what happened to it in the last year and the sense of despair that many of us have had and then where we find hope. Well, there's a connection somehow between faith and finances. And I want us to ponder that for a moment. Paul describes it in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19, our scripture passage for the day. And he's using investment language here. He's talking about what are you investing in? And I want you to hear, he talks also about the return that we receive. He says, as for those who are in the present age, are rich, command them not to be haughty. That is, don't be arrogant. Or to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches. That phrase by itself came alive this last year for many of us. To set your hope on the uncertainty of riches, because they are uncertain. You have no idea. But rather, set your hope on God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, generous and ready to share, thus storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of the life that really is life. Your hope cannot be in your 401k. It has to be somewhere else, something bigger, something more powerful, something you can count on. It is God that we put our hope in, not the uncertainty of riches. But it's more than that. Paul says you were made, part of your mission in life was to be generous and willing to share. I'm not talking now about your offerings to the church, though that is a part of it. I'm talking about a rhythm in life in which you recognize whatever you have, it's only temporary and it's a gift anyway. And so you look at, how do I bless other people? You remember God's call on Abraham's life. You were blessed to be a blessing. And so part of the rhythm of your life, you see someone in need, you help them. Part of the rhythm of your life is you don't spend every dime that you have, but you set aside a part of it to be able to be generous up front, or else you'll never have any left over to give away. That part of the rhythm of your life is giving without expecting anything in return, that this is what you were made for, and this is where you find the life that really is life. I love that phrase. It's so pregnant with meaning. To take hold of the life that really is life. This is not life. It's just a tool. Take hold of the life that really is life means to wake up every day and to feel like your life has meaning. There is a mission for you to be a part of. There is something, a calling for you to fulfill, that there are people waiting for you to bless them, that there is a God who walks with you and loves you, that even when you die, this is not the end of your life. This is the life that we take hold of, that really is life. This idea of generosity and this sort of movement where in our lives we're just people who are generous, this is one of the desires of my heart as your pastor is to cultivate a congregation of people who are just characterized by your generosity. Again, not just to the church, towards everything. When there's a need that the people know, you know, I know somebody who goes to Resurrection. They're the most generous person I ever met. They'd give you the shirt off their back. That's just what they're like. I want that to be you because that's what it means to be authentically human. That's what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. It's that self-giving. It's generosity in which we take hold of the life. Now, Proverbs captures this. Proverbs is a book of wisdom in the Old Testament where what the writers did, they just reflected on how life works. They looked at people and their life experiences and they said, this is just seems to be the rhythm of life. And they capture this in Proverbs 11, 24 through 28. They write, some give freely, yet grow all the richer. Others withhold what is due and only suffer want. A generous person will be enriched, and one who gives water, remember, water was like gold in the desert-like environment in the Near East. One who gives water will get water. Those who trust in their riches will wither, but the righteous will flourish like green leaves. Jesus said it this way, it is more blessed to give than to receive. St. Francis said it this way, it is in giving that we receive. Paul said it this way, by giving we take hold of the life that really is life. Now today is the day when our members, and those of you who consider this your church family, either online or here in person, you return your commitment cards. And this is something we do every year. We pray about what will I give to God's work through the church in the coming year, and we fill those out. And that becomes an expression of our faith and a commitment we make to God for the coming year. And the church then uses that to determine what it will do in ministry in the next year. And so people ask me, well, Pastor Adam, what's appropriate? What should I be giving in terms of my giving to God through the church? That's a really good question. I mean, I want to know that. I've gone to stay in hotels. Once stayed in a fancy hotel that somebody else was putting me up in, and I went to the concierge desk. I said, what's an appropriate tip? I don't know what's appropriate here. I don't stay in hotels like this. What's right? People want to know, what am I supposed to give? So I asked my pastor that when I was a kid, when I first became a Christian at the age of 14. I asked my pastor, I said, Pastor Phil, how much do we give? And he said, well, the Bible teaches the tithe. I said, I don't know what that means. He says, it's your first fruits. Well, what is that? He said, it's the first tenth of what you have. I said, you've got to be kidding. That can't be right. He said, no, it's not that you can't be a Christian without doing this. You just asked me what is the norm in the Bible? It's the first tenth. I said, well, why? He said, well, first of all, we find the first person to tithe was Abraham, who won a battle, and he took 10% of the spoils of battle, and he presented them to God through the priest at the city of Salem. And he dedicated that to God as a way of thanking God for his blessings. Jacob was wandering in the wilderness. You remember we studied Jacob a few months ago. And while he was in the wilderness, he was afraid. He was fleeing his brother. And he was afraid. And he said, God, if you'll be with me the rest of my life, a tenth of all that I have, I'll give to you. Why a tenth? Well, it was the king's portion. And so God was their king, and they gave the first tenth to God. We get to the time of Moses, and it was codified in what's called the tithe in the Old Testament law. And God said through Moses that the people were to bring the first fruits, the first tenth of their harvest and of their flocks, and they were to present that to God as a way of expressing their thanks and their dependence upon God, and God would bless them for that. But you get to the end of the Old Testament, and the people had sort of forgotten the reason for this altogether. And so they came to a place where in Malachi, the people were now giving not because they wanted to, because it expressed their joy and their thanks, but instead as a sense of obligation and duty. And what they did is they brought all the diseased animals to God. So they brought the lambs that were sick and lame and those that were blind, the ones they wouldn't eat, and they presented those to God. And God finally says in the book of Malachi, please stop. Just please stop bringing me this stuff. Because it's an expression of your faith and your heart, and it just makes me sad when I see what you bring me. So just don't anymore. But then he says this, but I would call you to bring to me the kind of gifts that I've asked, to bring the full tithe into the storehouse, your best, your first fruits, and see if I will not pour out for you a blessing that you cannot possibly contain if you actually approach me in this way. So the other thing my pastor did is he took out 10 pennies from his pocket. This helped me. He took out 10 pennies and he said, Adam, it's really simple. For every 10 pennies you have, one of them you give to God. I thought, I can do that with a penny out of 10. Every $10 you have, a dollar of it, you present as your offering to God. For every $100, $10. Now, I was flipping hamburgers at Hardee's at 105th and Metcalf at the time, and I was making 70 bucks a week, and I began writing out a check for $7 a week to God through the church. And God blessed that, and I was surprised. LaVon and I got married, and we lived at the poverty level for the first couple of years that we were married, but we gave 10% of what we had to God. We did that. We didn't even like the pastor of the church we were attending, but it wasn't about the pastor. It was about God. It was a way of saying, God, you know, we're poor, but we can give this, and we want to honor you, and we want to say that you're the most important thing in our lives. And so before we spent anything else, we made that commitment. And God blessed that. And every year, it seemed like we had more money than enough to make ends meet. And the next year, we did better than the year before. And I can't promise you tithe and you're not ever going to lose your job and financially you're going to be blessed and you're going to have, that's not how it works. All I know is my personal experience was when I gave, I felt richer. When we gave our 10%, we found that everything else worked fine and we had more than enough. And every year, we felt blessed. Ed Robertson, who's one of our senior adults here in the congregation, a retired pastor, wrote me an email this week and he said, you know, when I was pastoring, it was interesting. It was like magic. You know, people who decided to tithe always felt like they had more money after they tithed than they had before. So part of what we do is we ask the question, where are you investing and what are you investing in? And I got to tell you, part of the reason why I teach tithing, it's not because our budget needs you to tithe, although that would allow us to do things we'd never imagined here before, but because I think it will change your life, and it's changed my life. Now, you expect me to say things like this, so we asked a few of our younger families in our congregation, young adults in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, who have taken these steps to just tell us why and what it means to them, and this is what they had to say.
Giving back to God matters because God sustained us at our lowest point.
It's just something I feel that I owe to God.
When my husband and I got married, it was so tough. We were living paycheck to paycheck, but I wanted to make sure that tithing was the first thing that we did. That was the first check that we wrote.
We make sure that we tithe first just so we can go through the exercise of really giving it up to God.
We have now been able to budget our tithing and know that that's a big part of what we do, but we have given every month, even in our lowest moments.
Once we wrote it, it seems like everything else just kind of fell into place and we were able to make ends meet.
There is a joy that comes from giving to God.
What I do feel is a way better sense of self-esteem. I feel closer to God. I feel like I can be of service to other people.
I know that every time that we're giving, God is going to use that money and multiply it, and it's going to become something so much more.
Just knowing that you are playing an important role in fulfilling our purpose here on earth as Christians.
And that's how it happens in our lives. And so in the act of giving, part of what we find, it's first for Levon and me, it's just a way of saying, God, you're first in our lives and you'll always be. You're the most important thing to us. And so that's the first check that we write. It's the first commitment that we make every year. But it also is a way for us to invest in God's kingdom work. And when you give here at Church of the Resurrection, you're helping us build a Christian community where non-religious and nominally religious people are becoming deeply committed Christians. You're helping to change lives and transform communities and to renew the church. And your giving makes a difference, first in your life and then in the lives of countless other people. Now, one person who got this was a 10-year-old girl who worships at Resurrection West. Her name is Gracie. And last year, I came back from Africa, and I was preaching a sermon on what I experienced when we were in Zambia. We were in northern Zambia in this village where half the people had died of HIV. And there were children, orphan children, hundreds of them. And several years ago, you gave the financial resources to build a community center there, what we call an educare center. Three different churches meet there for worship. We have a school that meets there for kids of all ages, training for adults in life skills and the ability to make a living. We have a place there that cares for women who are dying of HIV/AIDS. We installed a pump in the river and then irrigated the fields where there had just been dust and brush. There were now crops coming forth. We built a hen house. You built a hen house there. And then we built three fish ponds on that site. And I showed you a photograph of this. These are the three fish ponds. You see them tiered down the hillside and the crops in the background. And these all have tilapia in them that you purchased for these fish ponds. You pay the salary of this guy who takes care of the fish ponds. And in the background, you see the building that you built. That's the Educare Center, and the hen house is back behind that. And we talked about how there are hundreds of people who are eating because of the investment that you made there. And Gracie's sitting there at Resurrection West, and she's looking at these pictures, and she goes home that day, and she asks her mom and dad, she said, you know, I've been writing songs, and I've been taking voice lessons, and I wondered, could I record a CD, and maybe my friends would buy my CD, and maybe grandma and grandpa and other family members, and I could help build a fish pond. And her mom and dad said, that's a really great idea, Gracie. Well, sure, you could do that. And so she went, she recorded a CD. I think we have a photograph of her as she was recording. And you know what? It was a pretty darn good CD. And she began to share it with her friends, and people began to buy the CD. And then she was asked to sing at a church and then at another church, and people bought the CDs. And it's actually been a pretty miraculous thing that's happened in the last year. Gracie, come on over here. I want to introduce you to the folks. This is Gracie Schramm, and she is... Good to see you, Gracie. Let me sneak over here. Gracie is now 11 years old. She's in sixth grade. And last night, she handed me this envelope with a check in it made out to the church that represents the proceeds from the CDs that she sold in the last year to buy fish ponds. How much is in this envelope?
$75,000.
Wait, $7,500?
Oh, yeah, sorry, $7,500. And then so far we've actually raised $10,000.
Really? So you've actually raised more than this so far. You've raised enough, that includes all the CDs that we sold so far this weekend, you've raised enough to build 10 fish ponds. You did this. God did this through you, but 10 fish ponds. How awesome is that? And, you know, Gracie could have done a million other things, but she chose to use her gifts and the gifts that God has given to her to invest in the lives of other people and to honor God. And, you know, these 10 fish ponds, there'll be thousands of children your age in Africa who will be eating because of what you've done. Why did you do this?
When I saw the videos of kids my age taking care of their younger siblings because their parents had died of AIDS, I knew I wanted to do something to help and I wanted to give the money to them.
That is very, very cool. Well, we're going to ask you if you would sing a song for us today. And what song are you going to sing?
I'm going to sing a song that I wrote for my CD, and it's called How Far.
Okay. And I want you to listen carefully to the words, and then I'll wrap up the sermon after the song. I want to say to, once you be seated, I want to say to Gracie, our applauding and standing is a way of just saying we are very proud of you and what God has done through you and the witness you've made to us. You've touched our hearts today because you've helped us remember what it means to be human. And I'm going to invite you to slip out and to sit in the narthex at the well. And if you're interested, Grace, you'd love to sell a few more CDs and build a few more fish ponds today. So her CDs are going to be out there. She's going to be signing those after the service. And again, Gracie, thank you so much. We're really proud of you. Bless you. So let me wrap it up in this way. You know, what does your life look like? What do you value most? Fires are good times to reevaluate. And I was called several years ago, a friend of mine called to say that his house was on fire. And I drove over to the house. The fire department had extinguished the fire. The trucks were still there. This family had been at the lake and had driven back to find everything that they thought was important in their life. Well, almost everything was gone. All the stuff they'd accumulated over all those years. The firemen were able to pull out a handful of things that were waterlogged and set them on the driveway. And the man looked at me and he said, "There's nothing like a fire to make you reevaluate." To reevaluate, to revalue, to figure out what really matters in your life. And if we've gone through this fire this last year and you have not reevaluated, you have missed the power and the opportunity that's been with us as a result of this fire. So, I'll ask you one last time. What are you investing in? Now, here's the invitation. Inside your bulletin is a commitment card. Those of you who are watching online, if this is your church family, you can actually make your commitment online. But for the rest of us here, you'll find a commitment card in your bulletin. If this is not your church family, then just enjoy the music and the video you're about to see. And in a few minutes, we'll share with you the secret of happiness. But I'd like to invite those of you who consider this your church family to take out your card. I want to give you a very specific invitation. First, if you're out of work right now, I'd like for you to write on your card your name. And I want you to say, "I'm unemployed right now. And I don't know what I can give in the next year, but I'm going to pray for the church, and I'm going to give my time, and I'm going to give financially as I'm able." And God will be honored by that commitment. And in a moment, you'll bring those forward along with the rest of us and leave your commitment card here. But most of us do have jobs or our retirement income. And I'd like to invite you to take this opportunity. I'm going to invite you to consider moving towards tithing. You may not tithe this year. You maybe can't take that kind of leap, but would you take a step in that direction? Would you make sure this year that whatever you put on this card represents the kind of gift you would like to offer to God in the next year through our church? And here's the thing. You know, take that step. 2 or 3 months from now, you say, "Hey, I don't think this is really, you know, blessing me or God or anything else," then call and change it. But I've never yet met anyone who said that they began tithing and later on they regretted it. I'd like to invite you to be bold and for you to offer to God your commitment that represents well your faith and your priorities and your love. So we're going to pray together. Then we're going to give you a few moments just to write down your commitment and then to bring it forward to the plates here at the front of the room and throughout the room. And then at the end of that song, we're going to conclude with a couple of important announcements and then Mitch Albom's quote. So would you bow with me in prayer? And as you bow, I'd like to ask you to join me in this prayer. So if you would just quietly say these words under your breath. Lord, thank you for the many blessings in my life. Help me to live by faith. Help me to trust you with my life. And help me to honor you with my gifts. May my commitment bless you today. Use it to deepen my faith and to change the world. In Jesus' name, amen.